Welcome to the 2021 version of Sweaters Forever. I'm Gavin Spittle, and I'm joined by two-time Stanley Cup winner Craig Ludwig. Craig, let's start with the name of the show, Sweaters Forever. Thoughts?
You must have been drinking when you came up with that.
I like it, man. You know, it's generic. That means we could talk about the league. We could talk about the Stars.
Oh, I see. So you put some thought behind it.
I did. Yeah, I did. Oh,
I thought this was one of your other side companies or something like that you have going on.
So I am honored to be your co-host for this show.
We'll see how long that feeling lasts.
Oh, man. All right.
I only have one question to start.
Yeah.
Do we have a beer sponsor yet?
We do not have a beer sponsor. However, we need to get one. Because yes, of the two of us, clearly I'm the drinker.
Yeah, clearly. Let's get Everclear.
So, quick story before we get into some hockey. One night, Craig and I were out and about, and I drove to the facility. So I had one drink, and then Craig orders another one, and I just put it to the side, and it was never brought up, so I thought that maybe Craig wouldn't notice, and boy, did you let me have it.
Listen, I've been a professional in a few different fields. Obviously, one loosely would be hockey, but that's a field I know lots of floaters. I can pick them out. And when somebody invites somebody to go out and have a drink and a sandwich, you would think that they would have a couple drinks and a sandwich.
Yeah.
But in your case, well, you are the size of a mouse. So I understand, like, it probably doesn't take a lot for you, but you play a good, you play the game well. You just don't compete at it very well.
I play a solid third liner. That's what I am.
Yeah, on an East Coast League team, on a men's league team. You're a third liner on an E-League men's league team.
Listen, I'm not going to, you know, my plus minus at the end of the day will be nice. That's my goal on this show. My plus minus to be on the plus side.
Well, I will say one thing. Your Uber bill isn't probably as high as mine. That's good news.
So for those of you listening for the first time, here's the goal of this podcast. A, we're going to have fun. Yes, we're going to talk Stars. Yes, we're going to talk NHL, but we're going to have fun because, you know, we love the great game of hockey, but at the same time, you know, we're going to have guests on. We're going to talk stories. So it's going to be a mix. It's not going to just be your hardcore hockey. Let's get to the ice. So, I mean, I think that's the way both, you know, you and I want this show.
Yeah. I've never been a let's get the business and let's stay on track kind of guy. So, it's good for us to veer off the path every so often. And, sometimes, I don't know, for me, sometimes it's more not just entertaining, but, it's worth the listen and hopefully that, you know, if we go down the story road, I can't guarantee they're going to be rated PG, but they'll be something you can tell your parents about, not your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of personality, in your short time watching this year, what has been your thoughts as far as transitioning from NBC to TNT/ESPN?
Well, I will say as far as the TNT side of it goes, my ex-partner's on there. So I had Chris Chelios as a partner, and he's a good friend, and I'm happy to see Chelly on there because I think he's going to bring a lot to the analyzing of it. As you can tell, Messier kind of talks a little bit of stories, and Chelly gets right to the details of the game. And I will be telling Chelly at some point here that I think he needs to get into the storytelling a little bit on the show, because I think that's what they're kind of going for. I don't know that the TNT, you know, as far as the basketball guys, I think they're as entertaining as hell. And I think so far what I've seen, I guess I would say a couple times, of Gretz, I think Gretz is going to be he's going to be awesome. anytime you can get, you know, the game's arguably best player to sit in there and talk, people listen. And I think he's he comes across great. The way he talks about things, you don't have to be an ex player to understand it. You can be just someone tuning in for the first time. He paints a good picture of things. So I think what they've done is they've assembled a real good cast. I saw a little bit of some of the other guys that are on there. Obviously, you know, when Barkley came on in the first show with Gretzky and things like that, I think it was entertaining. He's one of my favorites. I hope Charles gets on there every so often, but I think you're going to learn a lot. But as you know, like for some of us that have been loyal watchers of NBC and NBC Sports and, you know, all the other names that they've had, getting used to guys like Doc and guys like that forever, Doc Emmerich, you know, it's going to take some time. It takes time for me to even listen to some of the guys calling in the games, and then the analysis side of things. But I do think their intention is to keep it light, give you some good information, but kind of sitting around a campfire kind of thing. And that's kind of what I enjoy, at least personally for me.
I thought to myself, like at first, I was like, this is a little rough around the edges, but at the same time, I said, I think that's good for hockey fans. And the reason I say
that is because, you wanted to loosen up, right?
I just felt as though like
that's my thing is I think when I was doing that kind of stuff, if you watch enough and again, when you play, you don't watch. And so when I got done and kind of got tossed into it a little bit and I started to pay attention to other people, and my guy has always been Razor. I think Razor is the best guy in the business. And again, we're biased here in Dallas, and I'm definitely biased. I just think he's the best guy. And he likes to. What makes Razor so entertaining a lot of times for me is he laughs at his own comments and he laughs at his own jokes, and you kind of laugh along with him then, even if it's not funny. But he tells a story, and I know that when Razor had said to me one time when we were first, even before we actually got started and met a couple times about doing it, he just said, hey, we just want to kind of be a couple guys sitting at the bar, chatting and talking. And when you, it's hard for us to talk about other sports because we don't know a ton about all what goes in and out of them. But for hockey, man, if you could actually hang with some of us in those environments, we hear it quite a bit when we get out and do some watching parties and things like that. Like people just love listening to the things that you did and what you didn't do and how you went about it. And it's entertaining. And I think you appreciate the guys in the NHL a little bit more when you find out that, and we've been told this a lot, that they're a little bit more down to earth than other sports for whatever reason. I don't know. I know some of the guys from the football teams and baseball teams and stuff like that. I think they're all down to earth, but maybe they come across differently to the average fan.
Yeah, I just love the segment where Barkley was in net and Gretzky was shooting on him. I just thought, like, okay, this is great. This is personality. This is just like the inside the NBA. It's going to be a transition period, but at the same time, you know, as I mentioned, I kind of like the rough around the edges. I kind of enjoy that they brought in Paul Bissonnette, a guy that has an appeal to a younger generation. You know, I mean, guys like that, I think it grows the game, and that's what the game needs. It needs growth. And not to mention the ancillary programming that goes along with it. If you watch ESPN now, clearly, there's more focus as far as hockey recaps on the games, and that was missing. You didn't see the mainstream sports channels really dive into hockey, and now they are.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I thought I was doing something wrong when I was getting on the ESPN and ESPN Plus app and stuff like that. And I'm like, $60? Like, no, it's got to be $160. So, and I kept diving around trying to find the NHL package and all that kind of stuff just to get caught up. So, I think, and I agree with you. I mean, now all of a sudden, And I've never really been a real big ESPN, whether it's on the radio or on TV watcher or listener. But now when you do tune in, because you know that there's hockey on there, you are hearing it more often. And I guess because I didn't, one of the reasons I never really dug into it that much is because, you know, it always seemed it was all the other sports and there wasn't enough hockey for a hockey guy. And I don't know if you can say that from the other sports, but now it, you know, as a matter of fact, for the first time ever yesterday, I watched one of these documentary things on the basketball dude that got run out of Indiana. I guess it was Indiana.
Ron Artest.
What was his name? Knight.
Ron Artest.
No, the coach. Knight. Was it Knight?
Oh, Bob Knight. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not a big basketball whatsoever. So I watched that hour and 30 minutes. Hour and 26 minutes. And I actually sat there and watched the whole thing on basketball.
Because of hockey.
Or the coaching and the whole issues. And, you know, I would say he may have had a anger management problem at times. But, I was never, and I'm still not to this day, into basketball that much. I don't know enough about it. And it was interesting, but I've never watched one of them. I've heard the 30-30 things. I've never watched one. The only one I've ever watched is the Rodman one. And that's only because my friends keep on telling me to watch it because they're like, that's you of hockey. I'm like, what? I mean, I know he's a bit of a loose cannon off, you know, outside of the court, but anyway, so yeah, I mean, just like for me, I start surfing around and through ESPN and see they have a lot of great content down there. And so I'll probably watch something else again someday when I'm bored.
Yeah. His spilled onto the court though. I never thought as though you came to the ice early. Let's just leave it at that. You didn't let any distractions bother you.
No, I created all my own distractions. So, no, I think as a all hockey players go, we are so, I don't know if it's lucky or however we're programmed, that as soon as you get into your car to drive, start driving to the game, or get on the bus when you're on the road and start busing to the game, you have the ability that all the outside noise is gone. And you get inside that circular sheet of ice, everything on the outside that goes in your life disappears. I don't know if that is trained or how it happens, but you forget about everything. And that could be the same for, you know, football guys and basketball guys. I don't know. But I just know for us is that any distractions, you know, because one of the biggest questions you always get asked is about, you know, man, where was your favorite place to play? Like my favorite place is to play on the road, if anybody actually has one besides outside the rink. The downtown part, Rush Street, is always cool. Is in that old Chicago Stadium. And the biggest part that I always start with and lead into is when you're standing on the blue line and you're in that five guy unit that's going to start the game, and you have to stand there through the national anthem. And it just gets louder and louder and louder. And the way that the Blackhawks, in my opinion, would put their team together is they were built to play in that building because it seemed like it was a little bit smaller building. And so they would have their, I guess you call them at the time, the third line guys that, you know, were going to be running around, and they would set the tone and the tempo of the game in that manner. And so you're standing there and the anthem, it seems to go on forever. And you hear 25,000 people, that sounds like 50,000 people. And you know what's coming. And you're literally sitting there and you're scared shitless for them to drop the puck. And when they do, it happens. And then you kind of get into the game real quick. But then all of a sudden it's gone. The noise is gone. You don't hear them anymore. The noise is there, but you don't hear them. And I just think that for however that works and why it works, we don't hear what's going on. And it's the same when you're at home. It's funny though. There are times you hear more at home because at least you know in the back of your mind they're usually cheering for you, where the other ones are booing for you. And maybe that's why we're able to tune it out. So it's a characteristic that I've never come across a guy that has played the game that can't really relate to that or tell that same story. And I, you know, and now, you know, we have a Dallas Stars U18. It's an elite team that we travel around the country with. And, you know, you watch kids come in and they're 17, 18 years old, and they're usually always in good moods and stuff like that. But they get to the rink sometime and you can kind of tell what's going on. And, you know, it could be something at school, girlfriend, whatever it is. And I will tell them that, you know, you guys will learn that once you get inside the glass here, everything goes away for 2 hours. It's gone. And you need to let it go, because it's all going to be there when you get off the ice again. And as soon as you get in the locker room, you get out of the shower and you get in your car to start driving home to your parents' house or whatever, wherever you're going, it all comes back. And I just think it's a, I call it a quality, but I think it's a characteristic that they have to learn to get to that point. Because, you know, today's arenas, though, are different. You know, you don't play in as many that where it seems like people are right on top of you. They're spread out, and, you know, it seems like field buildings are bigger, they're higher and everything else. So maybe it's not what it used to be. But yeah, it's always kind of been like that for us is, you know, we get in our car and we start going, and everything else kind of disappears until you, you know, start driving home. And when you're driving home, it all comes back.
You know, I think baseball has the uniqueness, and I take us behind the scenes, because I don't think a lot of people realize how different each rink is. You know, because, you know, you go in and there's the rink and it's the same size unless you're in Europe. You know, tell us some of the barns you played in, because, I mean, you know, when I go to different, you know, I like to walk around, take in the atmosphere. But for the most part, a lot of them are the same. But behind the scenes, how different are they?
Well, again, you're talking then and now. And the buildings were different to me when we played, and I haven't been able to play. I've been in them all, but they're just, you know, instead of being a $30 or $40 million building, they're 600, four and 500. And so it really is tailored to the fan. It's the fan experience. And so the more bells and whistles, and you need to get into all of them and walk around it. And I don't even when I was in them, you know, if it was a new one, I got off the bus, walked underneath, got in the locker room. That was it. I never walked around a building until I was done playing. I couldn't even tell you what they were like. Some of the older buildings, if you wanted to go to even Chicago, I have no idea what the old Chicago Stadium looks like, because I've never walked around it. I come in underneath in the bus and walk down the hall and down the little hill, and you know, you're in the building. And a lot, and that's not the way it should be done. I would always encourage guys, hey, go look at every building, and now especially. But you know, the first thing that you did when you got into buildings and you got on the ice in the mornings is you would start shooting pucks around off the boards and around the boards, because the boards were different. And now again, they're all the same now, because they're probably all built by most of the same construction people. But you would find that where the Zamboni door is, that pucks, when you fire them around, they would catch a little groove in the Zamboni door, and pucks when, for two periods, the Zamboni door always seemed to be in the end that you're going to be in twice. And so when the opponent would fire the puck around in their own building, they knew that a lot of times it may hit that little groove and pop right out in front of the net, you know, home ice advantage. There's all those little kind of things, and they know what the boards are like, if they're heavy boards or they give, they know what the glass is like before they came in with the, where, you know, we used to have the partitions. And so you had the, you know, the rails that held each piece of glass together, and they stick out a half inch. And so when pucks got fired in around the glass, they pop out. And we've seen so many goals in the past that when teams fire pucks in, they hit something and the goalie comes out behind the net to stop it where he thinks it's going to go. It ends up going in the net. So all those little things. And now, you know, you walk into buildings now and they're all the same. But a lot of them were dark and dreary, and they weren't built for the people that are paying the most money. And now what they've done is they've turned them into, you know, these beautiful places. I can't wait to be able to get to the new building in, on the island sometime. Because I hear, you know, that building at Belmont is going to be something special. But what they've done there, and they know a lot of their success, especially when the Islanders were playing in the 80s and they won their consecutive run of Stanley Cups, that it was about the fans. I mean, when they were playing at, what's it called, the Barclays Center, I believe, downtown in Brooklyn there, yeah, they were splitting games. They were playing games, 40 games 40 home games. They were playing 20 or so at Barclays and 20 at the old Coliseum the last year or two. Not good for the players. Totally different drive. I mean, as a matter of fact, they would go in for pregame skates and they would stay there. They wouldn't go back home. Like typically you go in, you know, you drive home, have your meal, take a little nap and head down to the game. And they would do that when you're on the island. You would do the same thing. Some guys might stay, but you know, it was a 20, 30 minute drive at home. But now, now they're right down the street. But when they were going to Barclays, they would all just stay there. And after pregame, they'd get hotel rooms for them. So it's almost like you're playing, you know, 20 some more home road games all the time. But what the Islanders did is they designed that building with lower ceilings, seating similar to what they had in the old Coliseum, because they're trying to replicate the feeling that the players and the fans had in the Coliseum. I mean, you watch the last 2 years, the difference in the record, the difference in the way that they played when they played at the Barclays Center versus playing at the old Coliseum, because they got to play at least, I don't know what it was, 20, 25 home games at the Coliseum versus Barclays. And playing all 40 there. And then in the playoffs, again, you know, last year they got to play the majority of the games at the Coliseum, which was a bonus for them. So, again, I think that I wish that they would talk to players once in a while and ask them about locker rooms and all that kind of stuff, since it's where you kind of – it's your office. But I think today there's always been a rule. You either live by the airport or you live by your practice room. So those are the two places you're at all the time. And, you know, because you don't practice at the games that you play in, most teams don't. You're at the practice rink and your boards are different there and the glass is different there and the atmosphere is different there. And so those are just some of the things that you go through in the game of hockey, is trying to get acclimated with buildings on the road. But then again, you know, after you play 2-3 years in the league, you pretty much know all the buildings anyways.
Did you ever skate around the Boston Garden to get rid of the fog?
Oh, yeah. We had to do that. Like, are you talking about during the game? We had to do that during the game.
Yeah, I'm talking about during the game, not practice. I'm talking about the barn was so old it did not have the proper conditions.
Yep. You'd start, and it would just be all of a sudden, here comes the fog in, and you can't even see your partner. And they'd blow the whistle, and you'd stop, and you'd sit there for a few minutes, and they'd ask both teams to come out and start skating around just to get the fog to go away. So, yeah, unfortunately, they should have had blew the whistle a little bit earlier, because you were literally playing in fog. And if you remember those teams, some of the old Boston teams, especially when I was in Montreal playing there, it was a big rivalry, and it still is to this day. But those teams were built the same way, because the Garden was a small building. It was a little bandbox, and just like the Chicago Stadium, and their players, you know, Terry Riley's and guys like this and Stan Jonathan, all these guys that were heavyweights and that was their game. You knew you were going to get run on there. Cam Neely. I mean, they had guys that were big and can skate and that was their MO. And then you want to play against them in the fog too. So, I mean, it's like putting a pair of beer goggles on and trying to play hot, which I know somebody's going to say, well, you did that for 18 years, but it really was a difficult place to play at that. And there were a lot of things that you saw. I mean, talking about things getting thrown on the ice and beer cans and having, I would venture to say that I don't know if there's a player that's played in the last few years that actually has had a beer dumped on their head when you're sitting in the penalty box. So, or a beer handed to you when you're sitting in the penalty box. So a lot of things have changed.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can't wait till we have Chris Nyland on, because I want to ask him about that night he took out Rick Middleton and what you guys had to face going up against the Bruins.
Yeah, he took his whole front row of his teeth out. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember I was sitting in the stands, Craig, and the rest of the night, and I just, from your perspective, you guys must have been thinking, here we go, this is going to be a long one.
Yep. Well, that would be great. Knox is doing radio now in Montreal. And he's got a radio show that he does from noon to 3 every day, which, geez, that's a good idea to do on your show. But anyway, Nux does that, and he would be a great guest, and it would be story time. So, and he was the guy that when I got to Montreal him and I were the only two Americans on the team that my first year. And, you know, he had come up to me, and I really didn't know a ton about him at the time. I mean, I knew reputation wise, but he had said, "Hey, Americans stick together." And I said, "Cool. I got, you know, one of the toughest guys that I've heard about in the league is my buddy." And so he found me. I lived in the same building as he did, and he was at my wedding and all this other kind of stuff that come to be. But I remember our first, then we had training camp for about 2 weeks long, and we had four teams, players. And so anyways, my first preseason, not even preseason, training camp game, Nux was on the other team, puck dropped. He skated right across to me and just jumped me. And I'm laying on my back, and I just kind of looked up to him. And I said, I thought the Americans stick together. He goes, "Yeah, but that doesn't matter here." You know, so he was just sending his own message to me that, yeah, we're buddies, but this is the way the game is played here. And it was a great lesson for me, because it set the tone for, you know, the way that you have to play in training camp. And those kind of games in training camp, if you want to make the team. And so, and if it wasn't for that, I probably would never have gone about playing against, you know, again, Larry Robinson, Guy Lafleur, Steve Shutt, Pierre Mondeau. I could go down the list of big names at Montreal, but I would have never played against those guys like that. But that told me how they were going to play against me. And, you know, and ultimately, you know, kind of, I guess, set the tone for the way I needed to play and was going to play. And I look back, and fortunately for what he did that very first drop of the puck, I never had to play a game in the minors. And because he kind of showed me, this is the way it is, and if you want to stay here, this is how you play. And it doesn't really matter if it's a practice or it's a game.
So this is why you should listen to Sweaters Forever podcast this year, because Craig's going to go unfiltered. We're going to tell stories. You know, I guess we're about 35 minutes in right now, so I guess we should talk a little bit of Stars hockey with a road trip that was 2-2. First, I wanted to get going into the season. I didn't necessarily have high expectations. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I thought they were the third or fourth best team in the division. What did you think?
Well, I'd say before the season, I could definitely feel where you're coming from, and I could also see them finishing at the top of the division. So basically, to tell you, I don't know. I look at the roster. The couple concerns that I have is, you know, and again, now we're playing a regular season, 82 games, and the travel, and another team in the league, and all this other kind of stuff that has changed, which isn't that much, but the one thing that stands out for me is I believe we are the second, third oldest team in the league.
That's correct.
And so how do guys like, you know, Pavelski and you know, Suter, you know, these kind of guys, Glendening's what, in his early 30s, goalies, Dobie's 35, you know, and Rads is 35, Pavelski's 37. How do they handle the grind of the season? They're all veterans. They understand, you know, how to deal with this stuff. So, and what comes with age is injuries. And we've seen that part of it in the past where, you know, the guys that are supposed to be out there the most, and when you're out there the most, you're probably fatigued the most. And that's when the little bumps and bruises and tweaks start coming into play. And so that was a concern. I mean, I like I said, I even go back to, you know, a couple of years ago when they made the finals. That was a surprise to me. And, you know, and I think I had said this to you too at the time, you know, you come out of those finals and you wait a month and tell me who are the guys that you remember from the finals. And for me, it was the goaltender. It was Dobie. It was Pavelski. And it was Corey Perry.
Yep.
And they're all in their mid 30s. And so I'm like, man, is that going to be able to last? Can those guys, you know, get back to that level? And where are the other guys that we're supposed to be counting on? So, and you know, and then you go to last year for me, for everybody, you give them a pass, especially this team with what they had to deal with, the COVID thing and the weather thing. You know, you were off the rails right to start. You never really got on the track. So, and that, a lot of that stuff is circumstances that really aren't in your control. So then you look at the team and the players that were added this year, You know, what's Raffle going to be like, who, by the way, has been good. I mean, in the first four games that we've seen, Glenn Denning, you know, what we know that he's really good on faceoffs, but what's he going to bring? And he's been good. So, but I will start with Tyler. You know, to me, it's a question mark for Tyler. I don't think it is for him, which is the most important part. But, you know, he had a pretty significant rehab. I mean, I think everybody's seen it and heard about it. And he didn't just have one little injury. He had a, you know, a couple different things fixed. And so, you know, Tyler's not 30 yet. He's knocking on the door, but it's a little more difficult to come back from, you know, those bigger injuries when you get a little bit older. And, you know, so how is he going to handle up or handle the grind of the game, and how can he get back to himself? So those are question marks that I still have. And I don't ever look at the first two games, the first, you know, four games, eight games. I think you got to get somewhere around 10, 15 games at least into the season. And before you can start to kind of form an opinion of what this team is going to be or any team. Right now, it looks like they're kind of on track. They're going to keep the puck out of their net. Holtby's been great, I think. You know, but the scoring, where's that going to come from? And we know where it should come from. I think Rads has looked great. Radulov has looked great. He's got that jump. And again, but he's 35. And so will he have that in him at game 40 through 50? I believe that these guys, once they get to 65, 70 mark, their sights are set on the playoffs. And you have this little extra juice that's coming. But you've got to be in that spot. And it's tough to be fighting for a spot. And it's even tougher when you're, you know, 5 or 6 points out with 10, 12 games to go. So a lot of factors there. But I think for right now, yeah, you know, to me, it's still average. But again, look at the rest of the league. Minnesota, we know Minnesota's a better team. Starting 3-0. St. Louis, I was texting back and forth with Hitchcock about a week ago. And I was just saying, you know, I just think you guys need a couple more defensemen. And he agreed, but he goes, yeah, but our forwards are this. And so right now, I'm not sure, but I think they're up there on top of league scoring goals right now.
They're pretty darn good. I watched them against Arizona the other night. I mean, you know, Arizona's rebuilding, but boy, did they put it on them.
And that's the thing is right now, I think if you're a fan, you love it, because I believe right now goals per game is over 6 right now. But again, it's always like that because the systems aren't in place yet. The new guys haven't quite adapted to this pace yet. The lines aren't all solid. They're still looking for who plays where, who plays with who. And those are all things that come into play. And so your game, it's more, I don't want to say it's a shinny game, but there's a lot more quality scoring chances early in the season because your defense isn't really up to where it's supposed to be yet. And I think the good news for Dallas early on has been that, like I said, Holtby's been great. He's made some huge saves early on. And I expect that to continue. And even Dobie, when he had to come in the other night with 4 or 5 minutes to go in a game, and he made 4 or 5 big saves being cold coming into the game, he looks like, you know, he's going to pick up where he's left off for this team. So I'm sure he wants to be playing a little bit more. But for me, it seems clear to me right now who number one is as far as a goaltender. And I don't know if that means, you know, Holtby starts, you know, spreading his wings and he's the guy. And you start looking at adding players. Are they looking that they can move Hudobin at some point? I don't know. But, you know, we knew coming in, everybody, the questions were four goalies, you know, with Ottinger and Bishop. But unfortunately for Ben, we've seen this movie before. And so, you know, but you can imagine if you got a healthy Ben Bishop and he actually gets back. And I thought he was getting close to playing, but obviously not. But you can imagine, I think it's a good problem to have, is you got those three guys there. So I think what you see may be exactly where they're going to be, though. We'll see what changes in the next month. But I think they're going to be in that 3-4 spot. at the end of the day. And again, it depends. Colorado hasn't started well, obviously, but we know that they're a good team. And the team that surprised me the most probably in division is Winnipeg so far. I expected more out of that team. They've got a real good goaltender. I think they got a good, you know, top six. Their defensemen are solid. So I expect them to probably get better over the next 2 weeks, but we'll see. And, you know, Dallas is just going to have to, you know, you're hoping that Tyler's game picks up, Jamie's game picks up. I would love to see Jamie Benn play center. That's just my opinion.
I would as well. Jamie,
you know, but again, look at what Jamie did the other night. They weren't happy with the first couple of games. What does he do? You know, he's first guy to step out and you know, set the tone for his team and drop the glove. So, but they will be interesting to see how they like I said, 10, 15 games is going to tell me more about what this team is. And then again, you know, we're talking about Robertson all year last year, right? And so he's not in the lineup yet. So there's going to be a jolt for him. That's going to help him. And, you know, your fingers are crossed to see what's happening with Klinger. And there's nobody that wants to play more at this time and this time in his stage of his career than John Klingberg. You know, he's looking for a contract. And so he doesn't want to be sitting there. But I'll tell you what, I was surprised when he came back from when he got hit behind the net, because the way his knee and ankle bent, I didn't think it was so much the elbow to the head. I thought it was more the ankle or the knee. But he is kind of like Gumby. I mean, we've seen him for years now get hit in the corners. And for some, he just kind of shapes right around the boards and the dasher boards, and he always seems to come out of it. So hopefully he gets back in the lineup soon.
Watching Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday night, which I would encourage everyone to do, they were talking about with Klingberg that Jim Neal and Klingberg's side have been talking, and Klingberg's looking for the Seth Jones money, basically 8 years, $64-65 million. So it's interesting. I actually think from a fan's perspective, as I watch these games, I'm willing to pay that money, because I feel as though when John Klingberg, he totally changes the offense.
He does. I think he's the guy that, you know, everybody's got a quarterback for a power play, and Klinger does so many things on the power play, on the blue line. You know, again, I'm always very careful of comparing him to Zuby, and because I don't think anybody did anything like Zuby did on the blue line on power play or in general. But which, by the way, I think we're doing a jersey night for him. His jersey's going up in the rafters in January sometime for Sergei Zubov. So that's long overdue for me. But that'll be nice to see. But yeah, John has really worked on his other part of the game. His offense will always come to him naturally, and he's worked hard on being a better defenseman in his own zone. He's never going to be perfect. He's not built like that, those kind of stay-at-home defensemen, them strong, hard to play against guys. But I give him credit for doing that. But there is another dimension that he can bring. And, you know, guys like Radulov, Pavelski, Sagan, Ben, those kind of guys, you need a Klingberg there, because he can find a seam and he can give you the kind of passes that you need to translate it into a quality scoring chance. So you do miss him. But, you know, I think when you talk about, you know, whatever you heard on Hockey Night in Canada, I would also say that when, as a general manager, and you know that you've already given Miro, and deservedly so, the money that he has got, which I think is what, 8.5, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah. You got him there. You have Sagan at 9, and you have Ben, Jamie close to 9.
Yeah. And so can you have four guys making 9 apiece? I don't know. Those are the gymnastics that the bean counters have to do to see if that stuff is going to fit. But I think that by Jim Neal going out and grabbing Ryan Suter, and by grabbing, what was the other one? It was Hakanpää. When you go out and grab those guys, is he planning for a tough negotiation with Klinger? I think that Klinger wants to stay here. So that's the good news. I think everybody that comes to Dallas wants to stay here if they can. I think that's the good news, and maybe there's some give on Klinger's side to be able to stay here. So it's always, and again, I think for top players, players that are committed to winning, you always look at where the team is at. Now, if this was 3 years ago, I think a player coming here would be willing to take a little bit less to stay here because the window was more open then to me than it is now. I think their window is right now to get back to the finals if they can get there. But again, then when some of the guys that I've talked about, you know, the age thing, for Joe Pavelski to be 37 years old and be able, and Joe's never been a great skater, but he does so much. I mean, he does so much from the top of the circles in. He's probably not going to track anybody down going back to his own net if he's his own behind. But, and then in the room, and Joe's, this is his last year too. So, you know, if you're Klingberg, are you looking to say, man, maybe we don't sign anything now. We wait to the end of the year and then you see where you're at. And, you know, can you go, would Colorado be knocking on the door for John Klingberg, you know, down the road, or, you know, Vegas or some, one of those other teams, that Florida Panthers. I think the Panthers are set. They're a good team this year, but you know, are there teams out there that you can go someplace and win a Stanley Cup? Or are you happy being here? And you did, because again, after some of these, is there going to be a hole in this team for 2-3 years? And I think that's what Jim tries to do, is he tries to make sure there isn't these big gaps where you're, what do they call it? Not the rebuilding thing, or, you know, on the fly or whatever it is. But I think he does a real good job of getting a combination of players that are, you know, you're going to get Robertson a couple of years with these guys that are going to be a little bit older in a couple of years. And so he's going to learn from them. And, you know, the hints and the Garyanov and these guys. But when these guys are ready to step aside, can those guys step in and take over? So I think that, as a general manager, is, you know, part of your toughest job.
Yeah, I think the other thing that Stars fans have to know, I mean, if they get frustrated with Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn, those guys are on no movement deals. So the chances of saying, you know, hey, we got to get rid of Seguin or we got to get rid of Benn, I mean, those are not happening. The player has to go to the team and say, okay, I'm okay being traded. And it just, you know, if they're on the downside, I always tell people, like, hey, if a player's not playing well and you want to talk about moving them, put yourself in the other general manager's shoes. Let's just take Tyler Seguin for these 4 games. And I know it's way, way too early to make that judgment. But if I'm a general manager, there's no way I'm taking on the length of that contract and the money of that contract, even if Tyler wanted to leave Dallas, which clearly he doesn't, and he's on a no-movement clause. So, you know, we have Jamie Benn and we have Tyler Seguin for a number of years. Radulov's coming up. As you mentioned, Pavelski's coming up. I do like to see some of the younger guys, you know, flourishing through the system and coming up. I did want to mention Dennis Gurianov, Craig, because I thought he had his best game last night. And ironically, I tweeted during the day that maybe it's actually a blessing that he gets put on that fourth line with Glendening, because that's the line that had been best performing for this team.
What it does for him, the kind of player that he is, because I see Gurianov the same way everybody else probably does, is he's got tons of speed and he's got a shot. But what that does for me a lot when I watch him play, it turns you into a perimeter player. And he, when you put him on a fourth line with those kind of players, those are more direct players, and it drags you into the fight, and you have to get around to the net. You're going to be in front of the net, You're going to be in traffic a little bit more than when you're just flying down the wing and taking your shot from outside, or getting on the power play and taking your shot from the Tyler Seguin kind of areas on the other side of the ice. So that was what some coaches will do. And it actually happened to Mo. And there were times when Mo was probably too much of a perimeter guy for a guy like Bob Gainey. And I remember one time he came up to me and Bo had changed the lines up a little bit. And he put Churls. He put Shane Churla on his wing. Well, we can say what we want on this thing. It's a podcast. But Mo had come up to me and he just basically was like, you know, what the hell am I doing playing with Churls? What is Churls doing on my wing? And it was done by design. because if you're going to play with Shane Chirla, there's going to be shit going on around you. There's going to be stuff going on in the corner, in front of the net, and he wanted to drag Mo into the fight and get him to figure out, you've got to go here to score. And the perimeter stuff doesn't always work. And, you know, Mo could prove that wrong because he's got over 600 goals. So, but for me at times, I think about that with Tyler. And I watch Tyler, especially on the power play. And he last year, and again, a lot of that had to do with injuries the year before, but he wasn't scoring from that point. And those one-timers weren't going in from there for whatever reason. And, you know, we try to do it with player, the young kids all the time. Like, they can score goals from outside and they've got great shots and speed. But when a goal scorer is not scoring, they get down on themselves. And so the best way to get them out of it is get them to the front of the net and go there and pay the price to score a goal. It may go off your skate, may go off your ass, off your elbow, may juggle around, and you're going to get credit for a goal. And for whatever reason, even an empty netter, you take a goal scorer and he hasn't scored in 10 games and he gets an empty net goal, all of a sudden his attitude changes because he's like, he's out, the monkey's off my back. And so sometimes you just got to get a little bit closer to the net to score goals. And that perimeter stuff doesn't work, especially when you play against certain teams that, you know, pack it in, they got a good goalie. You don't get those high quality scoring chances. So sometimes you just have to go to uncomfortable areas to score them. And so we go back to Gerionov. And I think when you play with a line like that, that plays a little bit more direct and they're play straight lines, their straight lines are, you get across the top of the circle and you draw a V to the goalposts. That's how they play. They're not going to score from the perimeter. They know that if they're going to get any goals this year, they're probably going to have to get inside that area that you try to keep people out of. And I think if Gerionov is going to score and be a consistent scorer, he's not only going to be able to score from the outside, he's going to have to be willing to get to the front of the net and get a rebound, get his own rebound, you know, and go in there and get a little dirty, score some dirty goals.
I thought what Glenn Denning did last night, you know, in front of the net, whistle blows, pushing and shoving, I thought that kind of fired up the crowd. I mean, that's something that I would like to see a little bit more from, you know, this team, is, like you said, getting into the dirty area and making things happen and pushing and shoving. Because, you know, kind of watching the Ottawa game, I just felt as though, you know, they played a good third period, but it was like just kind of going through the motions. And, you know, you need those guys on your team. I mean, I wasn't the hugest Roussel fan. I know he was popular, but I did appreciate that he caused a stir when a stir needed to happen.
Well, I think that you speak of the Ottawa, that's how Ottawa plays. That's how their coaching staffs have them play. They're a team that isn't fancy. I mean, they just paid who's going to be their captain, a 19-year-old, $8 million a year. And they're doing that because he's similar to his brother. Kachuk's similar to his brother in Calgary. But they get to the front of the net. They bring the party to the front of the net. And that's what Ottawa is. And again, I think that's it's an MO that Dallas has had for a few years that I don't want to say they're easy to play against, but they can tend to be easy to play against.
I agree.
And I think, and that's why, you know, to me, I can go back to the year that they went to the finals. And like I said, I mentioned the three guys earlier who I thought, and the other guy I left out, it was the best I've seen Jamie Benn play in a long time. And it was because he was that bull in a china shop. I mean, when you go to he was part of taking out Kachuk in the first round. He's the one that hit Kachuk from Calgary and knocked him out of that's their spark plug. And then he was part of taking out Johnson in Colorado. Him and Jamie Oleksiak ran into him and he didn't play anymore, you know. And then in Vegas, against Vegas, was it Reeves or somebody else he went after right off the opening faceoff? They didn't fight, but Jamie Benn kind of was dragging people into that fight and said, hey, here's how we're going to get there. And that was part of the equation of them getting there with some goaltending and timely scoring. I mean, how many times have we seen this team or any team get down three goals and come back and win hockey games? Well, I don't know how many of them they did that year. So maybe that was one of those years. but I think, but then I look at Foxa. I mean, Foxa was great. I mean, Radek, we've seen Radek drop his gloves and he's that big centerman. He's willing to get involved. So, you know, so I think what Jim is trying to do is to sprinkle in some of those guys. And if that's what Glenn Denning is going to do, and, you know, so you have to have those kind of guys do that. You look at the back end for the Stars. I don't think they have one of those guys. You know, Essa will play physical, but he's not really going to, he's not intimidating back there. He's just a real good defenseman. That's what he is. You know, Suter, not really. And Hakanpaa, maybe he's got a little bit more. Sekera. So, you know, you don't, it's not, when you come into the offensive zone, if you're an opponent, I'm not sure if you're concerned about the physical presence that you're going to have at the front of the net or in the corners. And I just, I'm old school. So I believe in that kind of stuff. I think you make it, you find ways to make it difficult on the best players. And if they want to score goals, you're going to have to pay the price to score that goal. And if you're going to come to the front of the net, where I believe you need to go, especially today, how good the goalies are and the traffic that you have to create, well, you're going to come in here and you're going to score a goal. Well, you're going to pay the price, and you're going to have to go back with an ice bag on your wrist, your ankle, you know, your ribs or whatever, as much as you can get away with in today's game. So I just think that's part of the, in my opinion, it's part of the recipe that you need to be, you know, a deep playoff team.
Well, let's wrap it up, man. We could go all day. How was episode one for you?
Your sweater.
What was that?
We're gonna have to talk about this sweater forever thing. It's got to be something you're selling.
What do you want to name it?
Well, I don't know. Sweaters forever. It's like the first thing I think of is some guy sitting on a porch. Some old 80-year-old guy sitting on a porch with a sweater on. You may think you're 80, but I'm not.
I thought about two guys, one cup, but it was taken.
Oh, yeah. Let's not go there.
That makes total sense. You and I and a Stanley Cup. All right. Yeah,
I think that one's trademarked already.
We will brainstorm and hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you'd like to call it. Spits and Suds is not a bad idea.
I like spits. It's Spit and Suds. I have a beer, Lud Suds.
Well, I think we just named the show Spit and Suds.
Well, no, we got to let the fans pick it, if there are any.
There will be, of course. Yeah, we'll let them talk it. We'll let them decide. And then, you know, we'll brainstorm and we'll throw some, you know, ideas out there. But, you know, and we won't go heavy into hockey every week. We'll tell stories. We'll have guests. You know, so, I mean, it's just kind of a change up. I mean, you know, it was some quality Stars talk today, but I, you know, also wanted to get your thoughts on a TV broadcast and everything. It's just a conversation between one guy who happened to play the game and one guy that's a fan of the game.
Yeah, one guy.
Are you saying you're the lone wolf on this show?
That's on the NFL show, isn't it? Isn't it the lone wolf hat they wear on that show? So, no, you are the brains to this thing, Gavin Spittle.
Before the end of the season, mitts will be dropped. In my case, mittens. And we'll see who comes out on top.
We might be calling it Speaking to No One.
There was one time that I was wearing a sweater's jersey. I don't know if you remember this. And I said, hey, let's go. And you pulled that jersey over my head so fast. I was lost.
That was an invite. Now, listen, it didn't take a lot. I mean, it's like pulling a shirt off a 4-year-old. So it wasn't that difficult.
You don't think of me like as an old Ken Linsman?
No, he just speared me right in the balls.
Oh, my God. Wow, we'll have to tell that story. Really? Well, I mean, let's do it now. So you're in the corner and he went there?
Oh, yeah. Kenny was one of the dirtiest. He was the guy. He's like Beaker. He's like Pat Verbeek. There's only, you know, there's a handful of those guys in the league. And everybody will tell you. And the one of the best ones is Claude Lemieux. Like Pepe was the guy. I mean, we hated him. Our own teammate, we hated him, but we loved him on our team. Kenny Linsman, I guarantee the teams that he played on, his teammates loved him. Beaker, same way. But they are dirty. And speaking of Beaker, that guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's got – and now he's – I think he's with Stevie now back in Detroit working in management. Beaker's got over 600 goals. I think it is. It's in the high fives or six. But – talk about a guy, and Linsman was that guy. And but he would spear you in the face too. Like he literally carried it like a spear. And you know, he was the ultimate shit disturber, great skater. So he was more of a hit and run kind of guy. So after he stuck you with his stick, he was gone and you can't catch him. And he you know, well, there's a reason he's called the Rat. I mean, that's his name is the Rat. And he played like a rat, and everybody called him a rat, and he loved it. And he had a smile on his face. And so, you know, he knew what I love those kind of role players. But again, I say it, that I don't know how many penalties we've probably taken on guys like that. And when he was in Boston, that's what he was, is he was that guy that would spear you in the balls. He would get you behind the leg. And then as soon as you turn around to grab him, that blade would be right under your chin. He would have it. There were no, I mean, very rarely did you ever have any spearing. You literally had to put somebody in the hospital or, you know, to get any kind of calls back then. But he would literally have his stick in your face, you know, and he wasn't a big guy. I mean, now he's a big surfer. I mean, he's always been a big surfer. So he's probably spearing people with a surfboard somewhere in California. I guarantee.
Were you wearing a cup?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, I don't know, there are baseball players that don't wear cups. I think it's crazy.
Well, there's people in the radio business that wouldn't either, I guess.
I wear my cup every day.
Yeah. And what, a thimble?
Oh, man, this is going to be a long season. That does it for currently named the Sweaters Forever podcast. Hopefully you like it. And anything you want us to talk about, feel free to shoot us an email or a tweet. Craig, always a pleasure, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Looking forward to it. Ciao.